Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jennifer Farmer, and I'm the Deputy Communications Director for Advancement Projects, which is a national civil rights organization. The purpose of the call today is to go over the next phase of the Moral Monday protest, the Forward Together movement, to talk about expansions to our work, and to give an update or response to Governor Pat McCrory's recent comments regarding this work. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Dr. William Barber, who's the president of the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP, and it's over 100 branches and college chapters. He's also a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors and chair of the Political Action and Legislative Committee. He's also the convener of the Historic Thousands on Jones Street People Coalition, made up of 147 organizations. Reverend Barber?
Thank you so much, Jennifer, and welcome to all of the media who are here. In North Carolina, we have come together, black and white, labor, faith, gay, straight, Latino, Democrat, Republican, independent, young and old, to fight against a dangerous, immoral agenda backed by Koch brother money and Art Pope, an agenda of extremism by ultra-conservative Tea Party right-wingers that have taken over the General Assembly and the office of the governor in our state. We believe that it is extreme and immoral in a state that has 1.6 million poor people, 600,000 poor children, and 10 counties where the poverty rate has been over 20% for 30 years to cut Medicaid for more than 500,000 poor and disabled children just because of your politics or because you dislike a particular person who sits in the White House. We believe it's extreme and immoral to raise taxes by cutting the earned income tax for poor people, thereby raising taxes on 900,000 poor and working citizens in order to cut taxes for 23 of the wealthiest families in our state. We believe that it is immoral to promote extreme to promote a tax policy that cuts personal income tax, corporate income tax, but raises taxes on 80% of North Carolinians simply so that the wealthy can have tax breaks, and then expands sales tax and makes it more regressive, expanding sales tax to electric bills and food and prescription drugs. We believe it is terribly extreme and immoral to end unemployment benefits for 165,000 people who have lost their jobs through no fault of their own. It is extreme to resegregate our schools and to push policies to take public dollars and put them in private schools and eliminate preschool for more than 30,000 poor children, adding to a waiting list of already 20,000. We believe it is extreme and immoral to want to elect judges by private money rather than public financing. And we believe it is extreme to repeal a racial justice law. It is immoral when the law has actually exposed racism that continues to happen in our criminal justice system, particularly as it applies to the death penalty. And it is extreme and immoral, particularly in the South, but anywhere in this nation, to make it harder for people to vote and impossible for some to push unnecessary poll tax described as voter ID. To disenfranchise students at private colleges by saying their IDs will not even be allowed, to try to make it harder for the formerly incarcerated to vote and to get their citizenship right, and to even have one bill that's so draconian named Senate Bill 666 that you threaten to take a $2,500 tax cuts from parents if their children vote where they go to school, which is constitutional, as opposed to where they live with their parents. It's extreme, and the Speaker of our House, Tom Tillis, the Senate Leader Berger, and our Governor have decided to be extreme. As George Wallace once tried to stand in the door of opportunities in the South, they've decided to be like the George Wallaces of the 21st century, to stand in the door of opportunity for the poor, for the sick, for children. It's Robin Hood in reverse. They're not even acting like good Republicans or moderate Republicans, like those Republicans that helped us pass civil rights laws in the 1960s, or some Republicans of this state that helped us pass policies to help rural economics. This is an extreme immoral agenda. A governor recently said our actions are illegal on Moral Mondays because rather than give up our constitutional right, Article 1, Section 12 of our state constitution, which says we have a right to petition our government, instead of us giving that up and being willing to submit to arrest, he said we're acting illegally. But actually, what is illegal is their attempt to push and pass unconstitutional and immoral laws with a process that resembles totalitarianism and not democracy. That is what is illegal. That is what we're challenging. And we hope they will repent. But if they don't, we will continue to shine immoral light. We are praying, demonstrating, and willing to be arrested to stop these immoral, extreme policies in North Carolina and raise a standard of fight back against these policies being replicated by right-wing politicians in states throughout the state nation, but particularly in the South. This is a state fight with national implications. We have to begin to look at policy through the moral lens of justice. Our deepest moral traditions call us to love our neighbor, love mercy. Isaiah 10 says, woe unto those who make unjust laws that negatively impact the poor. Matthew 23 says, we must care for the least of these. Our constitutional principles, on the other side, cause us to be concerned about the common good, promoting the general welfare and the good of the whole. These principles are bigger than Republican and Democrat. Keeping hundreds of thousands of children and poor people from seeing a doctor, that's not only bad policy, it's immoral and does not fit our highest constitutional values. Kicking hard-working people who lost their jobs through no fault of their own off unemployment benefits is not only a bad policy, bad economic policy, it's immoral. It's against the common good. It's against our deepest moral values. And so we've created a movement that has benefited from the changing demographics in the South. For years now, we've been bringing together a unified coalition around shared values, around moral values, around anti-racism and anti-poverty values that cuts across race, class, and gender. And now the right wing is pushing harder against this coalition. We've been building for the last 7 years. This didn't just happen spontaneously. We built an anti-racist, anti-poverty strategy, modeling after fusion politics from the 1800s and the early 20th century in the 1960s, shared values. And we produced in North Carolina in recent years a new electorate, new progressive voting laws, new money and movement in education, new progressive laws in criminal justice. And that new working electorate that was produced by our coalition, the historic Thousand on Jones Street Coalition, that in fact produced the electorate of 2008 by giving people better access to the poll, has put holes in the solid South. It is a threat to the white Southern strategy. In fact, it is the reason we saw President Obama win in North Carolina, because of this new kind of coalition modeled off the old kinds of coalition coming together in the 21st century. And that is why we have seen a contest attack. They didn't just start attacking recently. They started with a case called LaRoque versus Holder, where they attacked Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act in Kinston, North Carolina. We beat that back, and it never made it to the Supreme Court. And then when they took power in 2010, they tried to pass voter ID. We beat that back, and the governor vetoed it, the only governor in the South. But they passed the redistricting plan in 2010. It's more regressive than any redistricting plan, more race-based than we've seen since the 19th century. They used that to gerrymander the district, put 52% of blacks into three congressional districts, 51% into 27 out of 120 House seats, and 9% into 19 out of 50 Senate districts. What that did was it gave them a way in which even when progressive voted, and in many cases in a majority because of the stacking, packing, and bleaching of black votes, they were able to win the House, the Senate, and now the governorship. And because they're afraid of this nuance, we believe we're in the middle of this third reconstruction, this changing of the South. The demographics are shifting. Blacks now represent 25% of that electorate in North Carolina, and Latinos 4%. So if you get progressive whites and blacks and labor and Latinos working together, people of faith, you change the South and you change the nation. And that's why we're seeing such an attack. And they continue to play the race card, because the greatest myth of our time is the notion that extreme policies harm only a small subset of people. And so they play the card that if they cut Medicaid or they cut unemployment, that they're cutting it from people, quote, who don't deserve it, quote, i.e. black and brown. Our job through this movement is to expose that extreme immoral policies hurt everyone. They impact all people, and it's beginning to work. We are calling for a broader debate, a moral conversation about public policy that places the common good and our deepest moral and biblical values at the center of our public work. And we resist the narrow-minded, ultra-conservative Christian vision that the only issues are prayer in school and where you stand on gender issues and abortion. The great moral issues of our time is how do we deal with poverty? How do we deal with the sick and the unemployed? Those have always been the primary moral categories. And this means that our movement is bigger than Democrat and conservative, liberal. It's uniquely Southern because we believe that we're in a real sense to turn this nation through this Reconstruction. And fusion and coalition politics is the way to do it, and that's what's frightening the ultra-right so mad. So we have a four-pronged strategy. Moral Mondays, where people are gathering of all different colors, raising a moral cry, being willing even to submit to arrest if someone tries to take our constitutional rights. We have a voter registration campaign. We have a media campaign. Social media's already got over 500, almost about 600,000 hits. And we have continued to push forward. Let me close by saying this and giving you what's going to happen next week. On Monday, the clergy will lead, the clergy from all over our state, this Moral Monday. And they're inviting people of all different faiths and people to come, but they will lead, clergy from all over this state, on Moral Monday. And we, again, will exercise our constitutional right to address and to demand redress of our grievances and to instruct our legislators. Then on Wednesday, the anniversary of the assassination of Mega Evers, we will have Witness Wednesday, and we will call on people from all of the state, NAACP and labor, to join us. We will have pictures of the martyrs and people who died, black and white and Jewish, to protect many of the rights and to win many of the rights we're trying to protect on Wednesday. And on that Wednesday at 12 o'clock noon at the General Assembly, we will also announce the launching of Voter Registration Summer, a new kind of Freedom Summer right here in North Carolina. We intend to fight. We intend to stand. We're going to challenge them morally. We're going to challenge them legally. We're going to challenge them at the voting bar. But the one thing we're not going to do is go backwards, because our mantra is forward together, not one step back. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Reverend Barber. I'd now like to introduce Penda Hare, who's a co-director with the Advancement Project. Penda?
Thank you. As a national civil rights organization, Advancement Project understands with Reverend Barber that this is a state struggle with national impact. In fact, I would say it's a national struggle being waged in a particular state, because when we monitor legislation across the country, what we are seeing in North Carolina right now is one of the most regressive, illegal agendas anywhere in the country. And we know that this is a national plan, because we have discovered that there are entities that are coming up with these ideas and then fanning them out to the states. And so we saw in the past few years voter ID laws being proposed across the country. Most of them were not upheld because lawsuits were filed. And now North Carolina is attempting to join that trend by moving not only a law that would be one of the most restrictive photo ID voter laws in the country, but also considering ending or cutting back early voting and ending Sunday voting and ending registration at the same time that you are able to vote during the early voting period. And all of this makes Advancement Project conclude that what's at stake in North Carolina is really the future of democracy, not only in North Carolina, but in the South and in the country as a whole. Because the pillar of democracy is the ability of every citizen to have a voice. And yet this legislature is trying to rig the rules so that the people who are most affected by this regressive attack on the working class and the poor will not be able to have equal access to the ballot box in the future. And the avalanche of voter suppression bills would roll back one of the most voter-friendly election systems in the country, a system that the state legislature ought to be applauding as a crown jewel of democracy. So Advancement Project is extremely pleased to be partnering with the NAACP of North Carolina in this struggle. We intend to bring our legal and litigation teams to this effort, as well as our voices, and we believe that in the longer term, that democracy will prevail in North Carolina.
Thank you, Penda. I'd now like to introduce Dr. Charles Vanderhorst, who's a professor of medicine at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's a premier researcher and physician who specializes in AIDS research. He's published over 140 papers in peer-reviewed journals, Harvard-educated. He's made the best doctor's list for the past 10 years. And Dr. Vanderhorst was arrested, I believe, in the second or third Moral Monday protest. Dr. Vanderhorst?
Yeah, I'm the class, as we call, class of 06, May 6th, I was arrested. So I'm just going to talk for two minutes on why I chose to be arrested. And I think the issue is more and more North Carolinians are realizing that the legislature is completely overreaching along with the governor, and that I've been getting, since I was on the front page of the News and Observer with my picture and my white coat being arrested, I've been getting hundreds of emails and Facebook postings from people who said they voted for McCrory, but they're just appalled at what he and Senate President Berger and Speaker of the House Tillis are doing to our state. And then they're basically attacking every group. So I would broaden it beyond what Reverend Barber was saying. It's beyond poor people. They're attacking the middle class. They're making absolutely no economic sense. It's going to cost the state billions, and I use that word deliberately, billions of dollars in their decisions to make a political decision about, for instance, Medicaid expansion. That other conservative Republican governors, such as Jan Brewer in Arizona, not a liberal Democrat by any means, the harshest immigration law, but she accepted it. The Florida governor, Ohio, Michigan, Nevada, all accepted the Medicaid expansion. Just this week, they're going to cut off pregnant women. We once had the one of the highest maternal and infant mortality rates in the United States, and then through really aggressive education and outreach to pregnant women throughout the state, it dropped to one of the lower things, and now they're going to kick all these Medicaid-eligible women off of Medicaid, so they won't be eligible anymore for antenatal care. I mean, the hypocrisy is just so appalling of these folks. So they talk about that they're pro-life, but they, once the baby is born, they don't give a damn. And now, since they're going to cut the pregnant women off of Medicaid, you can see they don't care about that either. And then the voter ID thing, that I think there are a bunch of hypocrites as well. Well, because you could argue, although we haven't seen any fraud in voter, if they want to have a voter ID, that's fine. But then why do they have to go about cutting the number of days of early voting? If anything, that would benefit any fake voter ID, because you'd have time to look in your computer system, et cetera. So I think they're just appalling, attacking everything. They're taking away the right of counties and cities to regulate smoking, to regulate building height, everything. So anything they don't like, they get involved in. So it's really the opposite of states' rights. They're really getting involved in everybody's business, from the bedroom to the courthouse to the city council meetings to school board meetings. That's why. So I just couldn't stay quiet anymore, because they're harming my patients. They're harming the elderly. They're cutting my taxes by 50%, and they're going to tax the elderly who I take care of on fixed incomes. They're going to start having a 6% food tax, medication tax, and physician visit tax. It's going to be the largest tax increase on the elderly in this state ever. So I'll wait for questions then.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vanderhorst. I'd like to introduce Reverend Jimmy Hawkins, who's pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Durham, North Carolina. He's a native of North Carolina, has pastored for the past 17 years. Reverend Hawkins earned his Bachelor of Arts degree in Social Studies from North Carolina Central University and a Master of Arts in Christian Education from the Presbyterian School of Christian Education. Reverend Hawkins?
Yes. I have been involved with Moral Monday since April the 29th, when I was arrested with Reverend Barber and 15 others for protesting in the General Assembly Legislative Building. The reason I feel strongly enough about this to go to jail, being separated from family and loved ones, is that I find repulsive what is happening in the state of North Carolina and the laws being produced by our political leaders. I hesitate to use the word leaders because what they are demonstrating is not leadership, rather partisan tyranny and selfish opportunism. I am appalled that these men, primarily elected to serve the people of North Carolina, are using their political office to endorse ideologies which benefit a few wealthy donors and not the people of North Carolina, especially those who are in desperate need of assistance. They ignore the title of being a public servant. I am offended by a governor who has no strength of character to stand against policies which he knows are misdirected and harmful and who dares to criticize those who are giving voice to the voiceless. I lament the fact that this General Assembly has been on the wrong side of health care, unemployment benefits, voting rights, early childhood education and school funding, racial justice in the criminal justice system, tax reform, redistricting, the environment, and so much more. It is out of this sense of moral outrage that I am working hard to gather clergy on June the 10th at Halifax Mall to make a joint protest against what we see as repressive legislation. We will gather from all parts of the state and will protest, pray, sing, and rally between the hours of 5 and 7 p.m. The response has been tremendous. Clergy are planning on coming from across this state. Buses are coming from Durham. Daily we are receiving emails and calls from clergy asking the question, how can I help? We have asked clergy to wear collars and stoles and expect to see a rainbow of denominational colors and symbols throughout the mall. It is out of a faith commitment to God, who describes himself as a God of steadfast love for the least of these, our brothers and sisters, who demands that those who carry his banner speak against injustice in the local and global community. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Hawkins. Finally, I'd like to introduce Al McShirley, who's a national civil rights attorney with McShirley and Turner Law Firm in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. He's also the communications chair for the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP.
Thank you. I'm going to make two points that are happening in North Carolina in the legal arena. We call them Moral Mondays and Tuesdays at the courthouse. The last Monday and Tuesday, the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, led by Anita, a national voting rights expert, put on a wonderful a set of witnesses and had the chance to examine Thomas Hofeller, the Republican guru for racial gerrymandering in Raleigh. This is in the NAACP's case against this racist gerrymandered voting district that came in a couple of years ago and ran through. Hofeller, who you the media should examined carefully and admitted directly and brazenly before the three-judge court that is looking at our lawsuit that he was told by the Republicans down here to gerrymander the districts, both the national congressional districts, our 13 congresspeople, and also of the state legislative district, so that to jam as many Democratic voters as possible. He used the term Democrat rather than black and Latino voters, but that was obviously what he did with his computer magic. Jam as many of our black voters into already safe Democratic districts so as to allow the Republican voters around those make them safer for Republican voters. And that's, in other words, the Republicans admitted saying all along to the courts that they hope the courts will not see them winking when they say Democrat as opposed to black voters, since there are some Supreme Court decisions say it's all right to be partisan, but it's, of course, not all right to use race. This is a fundamental legal question that our court will have to struggle with over next few years as the Republicans have worked to make the Democratic Party a black party in the South. They will, of course, they've had trouble doing that in North Carolina. The second legal thing that's happened, it was on Wednesday, the legislature overturned what was the most important victory that the NAACP and other and our partners had won. That is the Racial Justice Act, which was the only, we were the only state in the South that got to say that you could not give the death penalty to someone if they had to prove that race played a part in the death sentence. And we did that, and the courts upheld that constitutionality of it, and also found that there was racism had pervaded every case that came before the courts under the Racial Justice Act. In a blatantly racist vote, the Racial Justice Act of North Carolina was overturned by both the House and the Senate, and now it's before the governor for his approval or veto. We have asked the government today in a very strong statement to veto this so that we do not go backwards on racial justice.
Ms. Farmer?
Yes, thank you, Al. Reverend Barber, were you trying to say something?
Yes, I just wanted, just before you turn it open to questions, to just say two quick things real quickly to the media. And that how, as you've listened to these speakers, you hear the deep moral and constitutional values of this movement. Our movement is uniquely moral, uniquely Southern, but it has, as Penda said, this national impact. And one of the key components of it, the diversity of those who've come to Marmon, thousands have come out. You know, we've been on a tour across the state with 25 counties. Everywhere we've gone, we've seen diversity, and we've seen, you know, a coming together, not just cute diversity, but the kind around not just a transactional one issue, but the multi-issue, looking at the frame of our Constitution, the frame of our moral value, and what harm these immoral and extreme policies are doing. And that's unique in the South particularly, and it represents a real new push. It represents us going towards something. As we said, you know, the electorate in North Carolina that produced President Obama is not so much the president as the powerful, it's the electorate, it's the changing South. And what that represents in this narrow-minded, ultra-conservative agenda is so scared of that, and that's why they're pushing so hard in so many ways, because they know their time is limited, and they are trying to prevent a future from coming that they can't. Also, I just want to note that, you know, for instance, I won't even be there on Monday at that rally, because I'll be off meeting with religious and leaders, other labor leaders around the South, talking about this new dynamic and how we can, in fact, push into this new reality, if you will, this third Reconstruction, and why it is so important for the nation and how we must unite together. Because the more we get working class and other white people to vote their fears and not their future, not their fears, and we connect blacks and labor and people of faith, that is the that is the coalition, that is the change, that is the fusion that will change the South and change the nation. And, in fact, the overreach of the ultra-conservative is making that fusion come together, that coalition come together like never before. And I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. With those closing remarks, Mary will open it up to questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question or have a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. This will place your question in the order it was received. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. At this time, we will start with our first question. Our first question comes from Chris Kardish with the Associated Press. Chris, please proceed with your question.
Hey, Reverend Barber. I just had one quick question. I just wanted to hear your response to the statements earlier this week from, I guess, both Governor McCrory and DA Willoughby, just about, I guess, the cost to the court system of these massive, the number of court proceedings that are kind of flooding them.
Well, you have to separate the two. I don't think the D.A. Willoughby and the governor had the same comment, the same context.
First of all, so you're right. We'll separate the two. Governor McCrory basically called these unlawful demonstrations. Yeah. The D.A., of course, has separate concerns. But go ahead.
Well, first the governor said he didn't want to meet with them.
Right.
But them is veterans. Them are 500,000 people whose Medicaid will lose Medicaid and 165,000 people lose unemployment. He doesn't want to meet with citizens of this state, really, and to be called a governor, that it should be concerning for anyone that he would have that kind of attitude. And maybe it's because he can only defend his policies and the policies of the legislature within the echo chamber of the Tea Party and Art Pope-backed machinery or with the Koch brothers. He can't defend it when he talks to the people who are being hurt. Secondly, the Constitution, Article 1, Section 12, State Constitution, says we have a right to do exactly what we're doing. They don't have to arrest us. The Speaker of the House and the Senate pro tem do not have to order the arrest. But we're not going to give up our constitutional rights simply because they do order the arrest. And then thirdly, on the issue of cost, the real cost is these illegal, immoral, unconstitutional law. What is the cost of 500,000 people? That's billions of dollars. I think the News Observer said this morning it was $8 billion that we'll lose in this state. 165,000 people losing their unemployment. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars that will hurt. We will lose the tax plans they're considering will take more than $1 billion from our from our state government, which would keep the government from being able to invest in essential services like education, infrastructure, and the green economy. So what the governor was doing is when he says that, he's trying to do what the narrow-minded agenda always. They want to deflect and talk about a symptom rather than talk about the cause. And instead of honoring that his action and the actions of this legislature will cost North Carolina morally and monetarily. Their policies are constitutionally inconsistent, morally indefensible, and they are economically insane.